Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance FIL 240 for spring semester 2026.
Today, weighted average cost of capital. Now, as I said previously, I will be giving you a quiz on Monday, and it will cover stock valuation primarily and weighted average cost of capital. And I'll be going through that worksheet with you again today to make sure that you can do a WACC problem. Now, the quiz on Monday will be the first one where you will sign in by attendance radar as usual, but you'll also have to come up to the front to sign out and show us that you've closed the exam. The reason being that we have a few good souls who are just getting the password and acting like they finished the exam and going out and doing it somewhere else with their phone running AI. So now, from now on, for the rest of the semester, we'll be just check out. We'll just sign you out. Show us that you finished the quiz. Other matters, I'm trying to think. Yeah, we are actually drawing towards the end of the semester. And once I finish the class today, if you were not able to generate the proper URL for your certificate page at LinkedIn Learning, you'll have a chance to come up here and tell us what it was. And I thank you all for getting that done. Most of you in a very panicked way, but you got it done. So good news on that. What was I thinking? There was one other. Was there another announcement? I guess not. Okay. First thing we'll do is we're going to have a look at the numbers again, as we usually do. And this was one of those kind of global bull days. It started bullish on the east side of the world, as you can see with the Nikkei up really strong, and then the Hang Seng up very good too, and even Australia wasn't negative at least. But it something that you'll see is a positive day like that in the eastern half of the world, as the sun goes up and they trade, and then it starts to set there, and then you start seeing the activity on the Eastern Europe in their exchanges. And then as they close, Western Europe is opening up in Great Britain. And if there is a really strong bull day, sometimes it will kind of infect the exchanges as the sun rises further and further, farther and farther to the west. And that is a day very much like this one. We could almost see this day coming here when we, on our side, first Asia was in a strongly bullish mood. Then you had Europe that was in just a very good, strong mood too. And then by the time it was over, the sun was coming up here and our exchanges opened and they were sort of infected with this bullish feeling. And so the Dow was up really decent amount, about 0.6. It lost a lot of its momentum at the end, though. It's losing it now. It's still trading, but a lot of the excitement kind of drained out. The S&P 500 is still up about 0.75%, and the NASDAQ is up a good, better than 1%. But they are all beginning to lose their momentum. That good feeling that was coming across from the east to the west, it got to us, but now it's kind of losing its steam, unfortunately. But it was still a bullish day. It's still a bullish day overall, at least for now it is. But if we look down here, we've got the crude oil and Brent are just straddling $100 a barrel. That the good news is that's not as bad as it's been. The bad news is it's a lot higher than it had been for a long, long time. We hadn't had prices like this since 2022, I think. We had a spike, but this one's a longer, more enduring high price for oil. And the thing to bring up about this is that when you think of oil, you think, well, that's gas prices. Actually, it's a lot more than that. First of all, you have, as I've told you before, oil is cracked into gasoline. That's about 50% of what oil does, is used for. But then about a fourth more, 25% more, it goes to distillates, and that would be diesel, jet fuel, and kerosene. And then the other about fourth goes to other things. Now, let's go back to the beginning. With the price of, with oil up in price, that means gasoline prices are going to be higher. So driving everywhere is going to cost you more, to your work, to visit other people and all that. However, then you get down to the diesel, and that's going up really high right now. And that is the transportation of all the goods that you buy. They go in trucks. A lot of it goes in trucks. Some goes in rail, but most of the consumer goods and all that kind of stuff, that's in trucks which use diesel. And with diesel going up, your trucking costs are going to go up. And that means that the cost of the goods that are sold to you are going to go up. Then we get down to, and of course, jet fuel. If you're going to fly anywhere, jet fuel is more expensive, so your plane tickets are going to be more expensive. Then we get down to the that last fourth, that among the hydrocarbon products uses are fertilizer. Fertilizer is oil is obviously. Fracked oil is used in fertilizers. That means what goes on the fields to get the crops to grow and grow well is going to go up in price, which means that crop prices will go up, which means that that will be more expensive for everything from your cereal to that kale that you like to eat for some reason to your fruits and vegetables that come from the United States. All of those will go up in price because the fertilizer utilizes oil products. Then you get other things that are used that use oil, hydrocarbons, that stuff, that greasy black stuff. One of them would be pharmaceuticals use hydrocarbon products. Cosmetics use hydrocarbon products. And that ubiquitous thing called plastic uses hydrocarbon products. So anything that uses oil, and so much of what we have use is oil, has oil in it, has oil products in it. There you go. They all go up in price. This has an underlying point too, that when we talk about freeing ourselves from the fossil fuels, that is never going to happen completely in your lifetime or even in the lifetimes of your grandchildren, because so very much of everything that is made lives off oil. Now, it would be nice if we could get off the fossil fuels because, quite honestly, they are nasty, they're dirty, and they do have climate consequences. However, we can't get off them because so much of everything you're holding right now, for everything from clothing you're wearing to those computers that you're using to the cosmetics. I mean, I use cosmetics. Everything, it's got oil in it. So when those oil prices go up, that isn't just your gasoline. That is just about everything you have and buy. So keep that in mind when you see those oil prices, because they go up. It's more than just your cost of your tank of gas that goes up. It's a lot of other things, including what you eat. Now, but let me show you something here. We had a really strong boost of a day on some markets, and others sucked. Notice the technology sector was up. It wasn't spectacular, but it's doing its job, almost 1% up overall. An index of all the technology stocks and others. But notice here that we have consumer defensives, but here energy is taking a whacking, a beating today. And we can look at a couple of the stocks in the energy industry. One of them would be, for example, ConAgra. I've shown you this one before. it's just getting slapped downward today. It got hit really hard early. See how earlier in the trading day, it just got knocked down and it recovered, but it's still well below about 1.25% down for the day. So that is bad news there, of course, because, you know, that energy, agriculture. Here's one that I would take right, MPC, Marathon, MPC. That was ag. This is Marathon. Took a major hit downward today, 3% down. Classic energy company getting its ass kicked right now because the energy sector is, you know, you think, well, they'll just pass their costs along. Not all of them. They can't, if they're in oil, then they're going to be hurt because they can't pass on all of their prices. If you remember from your microeconomics, it depends upon the price elasticity of demand. How much of cost increases can be passed along to the consumers? Another one that I bring up here is, I swear I should remember this one. And this care is Suburban Propane Partners. This is propane. Now, propane's up for the day. Let me explain this. Propane is used to some extent for things like your grill, those tanks that you buy to fire up your grill and all of that. But propane has very important other uses in industrial and companies and in agriculture, of all things. Right now, we've got we were going into a slight drought, but now we're getting a lot of wet in the fields. Of course, that's good for crops. Unfortunately, it's not good for crops until the crops are put in. If rain comes before the crops are put in, the planting machines can't go into the fields because they'll pack the soil down, and then they can't get the seeds in to grow very well because they're mushed into very tight mud. So too much water can be a bad thing in the summer, in the spring for crops. Now let's go to the autumn, the fall. If there is a lot of rain in the fall, that means that the crops are taken out of the fields wet and they're put into the grain elevators where they have to be dried. A dry year in the fall is great. There doesn't need to be any dry. But if it's a wet fall, then all of those grains have to be dried. And what are they dried with? Propane-fueled heaters in the elevators and all that. So that means that a wet season towards the end of summer into the fall, that is good for propane companies like SPH here. And so you want to keep an eye on the cycles of the weather as much as anything else. And that tells you what different kinds of companies will be doing. For example, now we're going to probably have a late planting. With all this rain we're having, the crops will be planted late. That will give them a shorter growing season, and that may adversely impact the cost of grains and everything that comes out of them, from cereal to power protein bars to your all those good things that come out of fields like lettuce and tomatoes and all that. So you begin to think about how these markets are actually reflecting larger environmental phenomena like the weather, rain versus drought, and good year versus bad year for crops. And that begins to tell you things about what might be good investments versus not good investments at different times of the year. The bottom line, though, is that when we talk about stocks and bonds and securities, investments, we're really talking about more than just random numbers popping up and down. Everything is interconnected. That blockade on the Strait of Hormuz, that will impact on the cost of things that have plastics in them for you, for your pharmaceuticals, not just for your gasoline. When we talk about the rains and how it's raining too much this year, that impacts those same stock prices. So these stock prices aren't just abstract numbers. They're reflections of complex things that are happening all around us all the time. Not to get too zen or zen with you about this kind of stuff, but really is part of a whole cycle of the world. Now, let me show you something here. First of all, obviously, I will want you to bring up your weighted average cost of capital, okay, and all that, and you can get those files here in your files folder. But before I dive too deep and do a problem with that one worksheet, I want to show you the equation and talk to you a little bit about that weighted average cost of capital, WACC. The WACC is the weight of debt in the capital structure times the after-tax cost of debt plus the weight of equity times the after-tax, not after-tax, just the cost of equity, the weight of equity times the cost of equity. Now, it's a little trivial to point it out, but the weight of debt plus the weight of equity is going to equal 1.00. That's your capital structure. Like 0.25 debt, 0.75 equity, 25% debt to 75% equity and all that. As I had pointed out last time, that weight of equity has several moving parts in it. The weight of equity is actually the weight of the preferred times the cost of preferred plus the weight of retained earnings, common stock, times the cost of common stock, plus the weight of new common stock issued, times the cost of new common stock. Now, as I said, I certainly won't ask you to do any problem that has new common stock, a seasoned offering in it. But if, then that means that the weight of equity is actually comprises the weight of preferred plus the weight of retained earnings, plus the weight of new common stock. Now these, it's not really that crucial that you memorize that. It's just sort of one of those side mentions. Here's something though. Now remember that the cost of that debt is cheaper than equity it's for two reasons. One is because the interest on debt is tax deductible. You subtract that before you calculate taxes. And another reason is because debt is a safer investment for investors, so their required rate of return on debt will be less than the required rate of return on equity. That's simply because debt holders get the first, have the prior claim, the first claim. Equity has the residual claim. So debt is safer than equity as an investment. So debt investors, investors in bonds, will not require as much of a return. Let me show you something here. I'm going to plot on the vertical axis, the weight of the weighted average cost of capital against the percent of debt in the capital structure. So in other words, that's one minus the equity. So I'll make a mark here that a company would be 100% debt there. And you don't need to remember these two names, but there were two economists decades ago. Their names were Modigliani and Miller. And again, you don't need to remember those. But they put out sort of a little paper in which they offered what seemed like a ridiculous proposition. They said that every company should be 100% debt. There should be no company that has any equity. And their reasoning was this. Look, if you have 0% debt, in other words, 100% equity in your portfolio, then this equation up here has a zero there and a 1.00 there. So in other words, you're weighted at, if you don't have any debt in your capital structure, you would have, your weighted average cost of capital would be nothing but the cost of equity. But as you add more and more debt, in other words, this W sub D gets above zero, gets bigger and bigger. Because debt is cheaper than equity, you're mixing more and more cheap stuff in with the expensive equity. If you're 100% debt, you have no equity because the W sub E is zero. So, and W sub D is one. So if you're 100% debt, your weighted average cost of capital should be nothing but the after-tax cost of debt. And it's lower because debt is cheaper than equity. So in other words, the weighted average cost of capital line should be straight downward sloping line with the cheapest place right here at 100% debt. Why would any company use a source of capital that's more expensive than debt? Why would any company use stock, sell stock to raise money? Because stock is expensive. It really is expensive too. I mean, a typical weight of equity, as you'll see a little bit here, is pretty noticeably bigger than the cost of debt. Okay, so why is this? And so they just put out this proposition. Of course, you know, everyone looked at this paper and said, oh, well, obviously that's not correct because we see almost every company has stock. And a lot of companies have more stock than bonds. Why are you asking this? And then they said, oh, I get it. Theoretically, that's what should happen, but in the real world, we don't see that. And I'll tell you why. And I can actually give you an example from my own company. You see, the problem is that at first, debt is cheaper than equity. But then the more a company borrows, the more percentage it has of debt, the lenders start to ask a higher interest rate because the company is becoming riskier in terms of being able to pay the debt, pay the interest, and pay the principal. So in other words, there is a point where at first adding debt lowers your weighted average cost of capital, but then the debt starts to get more expensive until it gets ridiculously expensive. I can show you, I tell you this in my own business. I have a working capital account. It's like a revolving account. I may have mentioned this before. Here's how it works. During the lien season, they give me a credit limit. During the lien season, I borrow on this credit limit to pay wages, to buy the parts for inventory and all of that. And then at the end of the dry season, when I'm starting to the show start and I start to sell, then I pay down that amount of that revolving credit line. I pay it off and then we start over the next year. Many, many retailers do exactly what I do, except for them, usually, their good season is from about September till the end of December, you know, the Christmas season. So the rest of the year, they're borrowing to pay, you know, their wages and all of their inventory, their lighting and mailing expenses and all that kind of stuff. But then, starting in September, they're pulling money in and they pay it back down until it's zero and they start all over in January. Well, here's the thing. I'll tell you how my credit limit works and it will show you what happens with debt. My credit limit, and I should have looked at this real closely. Up to $11,000 of credit, that my line of credit costs 8.99%. Then from $11,001 up to $15,000, it goes up to 12.99%. And then above 15,000 up to my absolute limit, 15,001 up to $22,000, which it was last year, I am paying 19.99%. So you see what's happening is that the more debt I take on, the more expensive the last dollar of debt I borrow is. That's why that curve actually takes that turn. Every company is like that. The first time they issue bonds, the coupon is pretty low. They issue more bonds, then the coupon gets higher. And then they issue more bonds, the coupon is even worse. So that is why the Modigliani-Miller proposition doesn't fit the real world, because debt is cheaper than equity until you use too much debt in your capital structure. And then it starts getting worse and worse and worse. Now let me draw this out on, and we have just so many research studies have been done with business data. And so it is classic. What you see is this. The weighted average cost of capital line against percent of debt. It looks like something like that. They all have that same shape. They're going down, and then at some percent of debt level, they start to turn upward again. But in every, now, this is industry specific. You'll see some industries where that WAC line bottoms out very quickly. Then you'll see other industries where it's pretty much 50-50. And then you'll see some where debt is cheaper than equity to a very high leverage. So it depends upon the industry, what the shape looks like. And this we've done in study after study, these, and it's connected to some other things, like what is the typical size of a company in a certain industry. Some industries are dominated by very few, an oligopoly. They can borrow money up to a way amount before it starts getting nasty again. But in any case, this point, the bottoming out point, is called the optimal capital structure. The optimal capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. The optimal capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. The optimal capital structure is the combination of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. Now, as I told you in the last lecture, the weighted average cost of capital is the fundamental cost of existing as a firm, as a corporation, as a company. There is no more basic metric of what this company costs to be in existence. So companies are excitedly interested in knowing where that optimal capital structure is. What is the combination of debt and equity that is the cheapest? Is it 25% debt, 75% equity? Is it 55% debt, 45% equity. They want to know this, and they want not just to know it, they want to know where they are relative to that optimal capital structure. If I am in an industry where the optimal capital structure is 9%, and I have my company at 10%, I know there's a problem that has to be dealt with. Even worse, though, is that a company, even if it knows what its optimal capital structure is, there are forces that will draw the company away from the optimal capital structure. Let me explain here. Suppose that here's your optimal capital structure, this combination of debt and equity. Now, what would happen if that company has a good year or two or three very profitable years? That in itself would mean that the company is accumulating retained earnings. But if they're not changing their debt amount, then that would mean that the company is actually drifting away from the optimal to the left. They're going toward lower percentage of debt and a higher percentage of equity just because their retained earnings are blooming. They're becoming more equity-based because they're putting money away in retained earnings. And so they are going to naturally have their weighted average cost of capital go up because of their success. On the other hand, a company that has one losing year after another, then the retained earnings is going to be sucked downward, which means that debt will become more dominant in their capital structure. So they'll go this way, to the right of the optimal capital structure. The bottom line is that the capital structure is going to have driving forces. Some years back, I was looking at a prospectus. This was a public company, and it was issuing what we call a season. It was doing a seasoned offering. In other words, they're selling more stock. And it was bonds they were selling. They were selling bonds. I said it wrong in the last lecture, I think. And in the prospectus, they were doing an issue of something like $50 million of bonds. They almost bluntly said, we don't need this money, this capital we're raising. But what had happened is that they said, this is to rebalance our capital structure because we had drifted so far toward equity in our capital structure that we're borrowing money just to pull ourselves back toward optimal capital structure. They outright said it. We don't need this capital, except that now we are too far away from our optimal. So we need to put more debt into our capital structure to get back down to our low point on the weighted average cost of capital curve. I'm not sure how many investors really read that in the prospectus or understood it, but that was what they were to say is, yeah, we've been so successful, we've got too much equity, retained earnings. So we've got to get some more debt so that we get closer to the optimal capital structure again. That's what that's all about. Now, what I want to do here is, if you want to pull it up, you can. Otherwise, you can just watch me on the screen. But there's one here. It's called WACC by Industry. And this is a spreadsheet. This comes from the Stern School of Business at New York University. They are great about having tons and tons of data that they produce, and you can just go there and get their data in Excel. I just use data, and I get data from the web, and all you have to do is I think you can do it this way. From the web, and you just tell it the web address of where a data set is, and Excel will pull it down. That's where I get this Their Excel is great. We used to call it data harvesting. We just harvest. We go to data sets on the web, and we just tell Excel, here it is, go find it. And it'll say, well, there are a couple of tables, and it'll show you what the tables are. You pick what table you want, and it'll do this. This is what it does. So it's pretty nice that way. Now, let me show you here real quick. This is all the pieces of calculating the weighted average cost of capital and then putting them together to get your WACC. Now, they do it by industry. Now, I kind of like the fact they also give you the beta, which is, this comes out about every year, so the betas can get a little stale. But here's the important things. There's your cost of equity right there. They give it to you. And then they say, oh, right, the weight of equity divided by debt plus equity, is there. And so then they do the standard deviation, which is nice too. But then they give you the cost of debt, and they give you the effective tax rate. So in other words, then they do R to the debt times 1 minus the tax rate, and they get you the after-tax cost of debt. And then they do the weight of debt divided by debt plus equity. And then they do that equation right there, that top equation, that's that number right there. All done for you. And believe me, companies really like to look at this. It's very popular because then you say, okay, we're in such and such an industry. What's the industry's capital structure? Now, we are pretty sure that if you take enough companies, the average of them, in the case of advertising, for example, they took 58 companies and they got the average for each of these numbers. So this weighted average cost of capital, you have to figure that's pretty close to the optimal capital structure. If you're taking that many data points, that's probably pretty close to the overall weighted average cost of capital of that industry. So companies look at this. They say, we're in this industry. What is the optimal? Where are we compared to it? And then we shape policy decisions based upon whether we are at it, or if we are not at it, what do we do to get closer to the industry average? And if you look here, these WACCs none of them is huge, but they certainly do have a lot of difference in them. So for example, if I were looking at advertising, that's a 10.73% weighted average cost of capital. But if you look down here, banks, they have almost just a little more than half the cost, and which sort of makes sense. Banks, you know, they deal in money, so they probably get everything cheap that has to do with money, so their input factors are a little cheaper. But if you go across here, you'll notice it's worth it just to see and get a feel for the differences in what, for example, right here. Notice that coal has, compared to other industries, it has a pretty high weighted average cost of capital. Coal is not cheap to mine. You have insanely heavy equipment that is drilling through insanely difficult mountainsides, or stripping the tops off mountains. So, and then you've got all of the regulatory hurdles and all that kind of stuff. That's actually a very expensive industry to be in at 11 point some, yeah, about 11 and, point zero or 11.1. And so, yeah, so you see also though that, like I said, banks, they have low weighted average costs of capital because their input factor is capital, so they can probably get it right from the Fed pretty cheap. But you go down through here and you look and you'll see some notable differences in these. Like down here, financial services has a very low weighted average cost of capital. I mean, that's one of the lowest on this list. Now, there are a couple that I wanted to highlight here. So, for example, healthcare products are actually on the high side. They're up above 10%. And healthcare support and healthcare information and technology. Let me take you down here and show you oil. Notice that anything that has to do with hydrocarbon products, oil distribution, that's a little different. That's not extraction. Extraction of hydrocarbons is actually an expensive business. And I can speak to that directly. Sometimes when I was working in the oil patch in Texas, that stuff, those pump jacks, the drills, the everything about it was big, heavy, hard machinery, which is always going to be expensive AF. And you really had to hit something every now and then to have even a chance of making a decent dime in that business. But going down here, I want to show you something here. I didn't mean to do that. Power is actually not that expensive because a lot of it is something that you don't even see. It's just electrons flying from one place to another. But come down here. Let me find your semiconductor industry. Oh, look at this. This is interesting too. Retail overall is actually very expensive. So companies like Target, not all of Walmart, but groceries are actually fairly cheap, the weighted average cost of capital. But when you get into the more general retail environment online, it's more expensive than retail at the brick and mortar level. Online has all of that need for servers. If you look ever have a chance to see a server farm, literally over several cities I was flying over, it looked like a city of its own, a server farm did. It was just ludicrously massive, with every one of those buildings packed with all kinds of high technology, hard assets in them. Go down here to semiconductors. And semiconductor equipment. Look at those two. You've got some of the most expensive weighted average cost of capital of anything. Why? Because it is not just machinery and giant rooms and giant machines and all of that. It is also high technology, so it requires extra special care, extra special environments. Very expensive stuff these semiconductors are. And that's one of the big problems now is we are turning so much toward artificial intelligence, which is going to just drink chips and the servers housing those chips and the hard drives and all of that kind of stuff as more and more storage is relegated to the cloud. But, okay, that's enough of that. Well, wait, what the heck is this one? Oh, tobacco. Very expensive. It is a field crop, and it is a field crop that is very special in how it's harvested, how it's planted, how it's harvested, how it is taken care of in the field, how it is treated after harvesting, gets into some very expensive stuff. But here, let me do something. I want to show you something, kind of a sidelight. I want you to look at the cost of after-tax cost of debt. Do you notice how all of those numbers are very similar to each other? Debt is about 4.1% with a very small standard deviation across industries. But notice that the weighted average cost of capital is quite variable. So in other words, most of the differences in weighted average cost of capital are driven by equity. The equity is what is causing the weighted average cost of capital to be different from one industry to another. because the debts are, the cost of debt is staying, after-tax cost of debt is staying pretty stable across them. But now for the real eye-opener. Those are not the statutory tax rate. 21% now, 39% it was one time, 70% back in the day when we were growing at a great rate, 90% back in a golden time, but it's 21% now. But when you look at those numbers, I could show you probably two or three that are 21%. The rest of those are effectively much, much less. So the crocodile tears about we're taxing our poor corporations until they can't do anything, they have to fire people, bullshit. There's the numbers right there from the industries themselves as they report them. There is not a tax burden that is worth even talking about much. Look at these across the board. Do you see many 21% there? The closest are down here at about, there's actually one that's one or two that are a little above if I can find them. I think retail has a high, retail, where is it? Come on, there we go. Yeah, retail. Retail pays a high tax rate. That's about the it. Those guys pay what the law says they're paying, but if you look all around them at all of these, some of them are almost embarrassing. Their tax rates are so low. And so the idea that there are myths that are promoted by interests, and of course companies are always going to be crying because their tax bills are so high and they need tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts. When you look at the data, you can use your own lying eyes to see that they aren't lying to you. That is a myth. So I just wanted to bring that one up as just a happy thing that real data, not stories, not advertisements, not promotions of special interest groups. Look at the data for yourselves. You're well educated and you're going to become much better educated before the end of your time here in college. And that's one of the things that I show you that gets me into political trouble sometimes around here. But anyway, enough of that. This is for you just as a side thing to look at. And if you want to, by all means, if you got a term paper in one of your business classes, this could be something you could talk about. Talk about weighted average costs of capital and why there are differences in such big differences in this column right here. Now, on to the fun stuff, your WACC.XLSX. XLSX, yeah. Pulling it up, and what I've done here, when you pull it up, there will be a problem already set up. That's this light gray right here. This little beast right here is the problem. And then you see how the parts of this problem, the numbers, go in. Now, I should point out that there are going to be numbers going hither and yon in this. There's not really a way to make the architecture really smooth and clean. They're just going to show up at different places, which is actually the way you see a lot of corporate spreadsheets. While these two numbers go in completely different places in the spreadsheet, just watch and know where the numbers are going. You see, the entire goal is to get the weighted average cost of capital. That means we're going to have to get the cost of debt after taxes, preferred stock costs, and retained earnings costs. Then we have to get the market values of them so we can get the weight of each. In this case, the market value of this corporation is $772,188,000. So each of the cost of each of the components will be divided by that total value to get the individual weights. You don't have to worry about that. All you have to do is get the numbers from the problem in, and Excel will work hard so we don't have to. That's the power of Excel. So we go SBK Corp, has 22 million shares of common stock. So you'll see right there, number of shares of common stock. Just put that number in there. Now, it's currently priced at $34 per share, so you're going to have to look around. Oh, price of common stock. So I put the $34 in there. And it just paid a dividend of $1.80. Oh, where's the dividend? Oh, there's common dividend right there, $1.80. Just put it in there. Which is expected to grow at 2.00% for the foreseeable future. Okay, where's growth rate? Ah, growth rate, common dividends. Now, like I said, you're just going to have to look to slot them, because it's just the architecture of a complex Excel sheet kind of makes it so you have to move around a little bit to get numbers in. Okay. The company also has 120,000 shares of 1.5% preferred common stock. Okay, so it has 120,000 shares. Where's, okay, number of preferred shares, right there. So I put the 120. 1.5% preferred, 1.5, there's the preferred dividend, 1.5%. And then I'm going to look over, there's the par value, $85 per share. So there's the par value. I put that in there. And now the market price of it right now is $63 per share. So I'll find where's the mark. Oh, price right there, price of preferred, $63. See how I'm just peeling the numbers out one at a time. Don't try to take it as a chunk. Just build the model. And then we go here, okay, the company also has 12 million face value of 4.25% preferred. So that would be right there, 12 million. That's its par value. But it's 4.25%. It's 2031, and I apologize for this, that I built the model late last year. So at that time, it was 7 years until night. So it's actually 6 years right now. I can put a six in there. But then you go, okay. Current market price is 102.40 on the 100. So you put that there. You should be familiar with this. This was just your bond yield panel in the bond calculations enhanced. And that looks like that's it. So over here, it's worked it out. The weighted average cost of capital is 7.25%. What it did first was it calculated, so it found that the yield was 3.80%. So the after-tax yield would be 3.80% times 1 minus 0.21. That's how it got that number. And then for this one, it just used the preferred. All it did was take the dividend, which is 1.5% of $85, divided by 63. That's how it got that number. And then the common stock, it used the constant growth dividend model. And so all it did for this one was take D0, $1.80 times 1 plus the growth rate divided by the discount rate on preferred, the common stock, plus G, and it got that one. Now these, the debt, it took $12 million times its current market price to get that market value. For the preferred, it just took the price of preferred times the number of shares of preferred to get that market value. And for the common stock, it took the number of shares of common stock times its price per share to get that number. And then it added all of those up to get the total value of the company. The value of its debt, plus the value of its preferred stock, plus the value of its common stock. And then all it did for this one was it took each of these numbers divided by the total. So debt, $12,288,000 of $772,188,000 is about 1.6%. Similarly, took the 77.5 million divided by the 772, whatever, it got that number, and then it took 752,400,000 divided by the 772 million and got that number. And so it just did a sum product. It took each of these times its weight in a sum product, and it, like I showed you last time, and it gets your whack. You don't have to do those calculations though, because Excel, when you know how to leverage it, use the formulas, and I didn't use any really fancy formulas at all. It's just a little more cognitively, you have to think about it more, putting it together, and you've probably started doing that already. But ultimately, there's your weighted average cost of capital. It's 7.25%. Now, once you have a model like this, you can start to ask questions. Well, what happens if the price of our preferred goes up? What happens if the price of our stock goes up? Watch this. What happens if the price of our stock goes up to, let's say, $40? Watch the weighted average cost of capital. So that would mean that we are actually over there, because as I added equity, in other words, the debt was watering down, my WACC went down. So I must have been in the original one with the price of the stock at $34 when the price of the stock increased, and therefore the percent of equity in the capital structure went up, the percentage of debt went down, our WACC fell. So that would be a goal, is to get that stock price to rise, because as you get it to rise, you're lowering your weighted average cost of capital. Okay, I want you to do your attendance radar right now. I did that at the beginning of the class. And again, the quiz will be on Monday. You will have to remember that you have to check out and show that you finished the quiz before you leave, because if you leave and you haven't checked out, it automatically zeros. Now, once you have gotten your attendance in, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.